I'm Elizabeth Reese.
I'm Marjorie Punnett.
This is Best to the Nest, the podcast that is all about creating happy, healthy, beautiful homes that prepare us to fly. And I love today's topic.
I know you do. This is very exciting.
It's so good. So the theme today is the healthy living sweet spot. I didn't come up with this. Annalisha Niemela came up with it, and she's our guest today, and you are going to absolutely fall in love with her because her perspective on healthy living and body image is just so good that you just want to keep listening to her talk about it, Marjorie.
All morning long. Keep talking.
You totally do. So when we talk about healthy living, I think it's such a loaded word, the word healthy.
Well, it's a subjective word.
It's totally a marketing word, too.
Yeah, there you go. Even better. Even better.
And it's so interesting how when you say, like, I'm trying to eat healthy, I'm trying to be healthy, how that means so many different things for so many different people. And then it also comes loaded, I think, with a lot of guilt and a lot of shame.
Okay, wait. Where does the guilt and shame come in for you?
If you're not living up to it. Now, personally, I don't do guilt and shame when it comes to food at all.
No, because you're great. I mean, your diet's really good.
It's pretty good, but even when I eat junky stuff, I just feel like I don't understand the point of feeling guilt is one thing. I don't see the point in feeling shame at
right.
all, ever.
Good.
It's
good.
A terrible emotion. Should be completely written off. It's not productive at all. It doesn't make you better because you felt ashamed.
I like that you've just hit on that because I am okay with guilt.
Yeah.
Not so much with shame. You're exactly right. You got to
split
those.
Well, you were raised a Catholic, so you're really recovering.
Oh, I'm good with guilt. Not even recovering. I'm no longer a practicing Catholic, but my Catholic experiences, and I feel very fortunate, were fantastic. I had wonderful nuns. So I was taught by nuns pretty much my whole life, and they were lovely. So not recovering.
You don't have the full Catholic guilt weight that others have.
I do not. I think I'm of the perfect generation where I got to bypass that. So I'm grateful.
But feminist nuns. Two
feminist
words for
nuns.
You, everybody. Go for
fantastic.
It. So healthy can be a loaded term, and I think it can be a real struggle for people to figure out what is healthy, and exhausting because so much of it is marketing and what we're told by the government is good to do and then what we're told that we shouldn't do. And it's like you're just constantly bombarded with messages. And so today is all about trying to find the sweet spot, trying to find this sweet spot in the midst of multiple elements of health.
And what everybody's telling you.
Yes. And then being there. So our guest today is Annalisha Niemela. Now, she helps people who not only want to be fit and healthy, but they want to be fit and healthy in a long-term way and a way that doesn't mess with your mind or the mental health of your children. So
ooh,
good.
Now that's a good one.
She has a groundbreaking philosophy, and she is helping people find their unique, healthy living sweet spot. So it's this idea of being healthy with ease in a way that's sustainable and in a way that fosters peace of mind. And she's the leader of the Exercise 180 movement. She does Pilates and yoga. She's taught all of this for decades. She was trained by the Institute for Integrative Nutrition as a holistic health coach, and her work has been all over the place. So she's
I love this.
Fantastic. And we are so delighted to welcome Annalisha Niemela to Twin Cities Live, I almost said. Oh my gosh, it's Best to the Nest.
Hey, Elizabeth, breathe.
Can you tell I'm getting overwhelmed by my commitments today?
Breathe.
My gosh, you guys. Good morning, Annalisha.
Hi, ladies.
You guys, I have podcast recordings. I'm singing a duet with Amy Grant and getting on a flight to Nashville all before 3 o'clock today. That is legit what's happening. And
yeah,
it's 9:43.
And I can hear it in your voice because you're talking even faster than usual because it's almost like I have to fit everything in and I have to make sure I make my flight. And I totally get that kind of day.
Maybe in post they can slow me down.
Well, I don't know. I think I like how fast we talk usually, Elizabeth, because I think we always fit two podcasts in one. So it's fine. It's what
totally
we do.
That's so true. Okay, so Annalisha, I do want to start, though, with you with this idea of health and your body, because I know you're so wonderful about talking about how you haven't always had this viewpoint and you were really hard on yourself for a long time. I think this is so relatable. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, my health journey really began when I was 18, when I heard about the freshman 15 for the first time, which I'm sure a lot of women can relate to. You go to college and you hear like, oh my God, a lot of girls, you know, gain 15 plus pounds in the first quarter or semester. And prior to that, I hadn't really thought about my body or weight or health at all. I was just kind of on autopilot. I was a three-sport athlete in high school, so I just didn't really think about health. And when I remember sitting with a bunch of girls in my dorm and hearing about the freshman 15 and feeling this like overwhelming anxiety, like, oh my God, I could get fat. And what does that mean? And I had no idea what to do. I didn't know how to be healthy. I didn't have any health habits really in place. And so after that conversation, I decided I was just essentially going to be a gym rat. And so I went every single day to the gym. I would work out for an hour plus. And it started to get really obsessive to the point where I would work out even if I was sick. Like, I literally remember having a fever and like crawling to my computer and Googling, like, do you burn more calories when you're sick? Trying to give myself permission to not go to the gym. And you guys, I couldn't find anything on it. So I went to the gym that day. Yeah. And so I really was, you know, people thought I was quote unquote healthy, but I was a bundle of anxiety and exhaustion, and I had no idea what to do until, thankfully, it kind of escalated to this point where I was willing to look at a different way of being. And I found this book called Intuitive Eating. And intuitive eating was a completely different approach to health than what I was practicing. And it really opened my eyes to this idea that, you know, we've got to be in touch with our feelings and our thoughts along with what we're doing and the results that we want. And that kind of propelled me on a whole different path where then I got intrigued by yoga and holistic health and Pilates and really listening to your body and to your feelings, and to a point now where I'm really committed to being a whole different type of leader in the health and fitness realm, because I think it's so important to bring these holistic, intangible things into the conversation.
Because if you don't, you just get on that cycle of gaining weight, losing weight, gaining weight, losing weight, because you're not looking at how you feel about yourself as a whole person. So I think anybody with determination, and I've lived with somebody whose diet has gone up and or weight has gone up and down. And if you're not looking at all of the issues, of course you're going to, and I'm going to say this word, and I want to ask you real quickly about this word. You're going to get fat. You said, I was afraid of getting fat. I hate that word. I hate it so much because I've heard it used around people that I love. And I'm just wondering, when you thought that, like that, I don't even know what I'm trying to say, because as when you said that word, you thought, oh, I'm going to get fat. It just, my stomach just sort of, I just sort of get a little nauseous because I know how much harm that word has done to people that I love in my life. What do you say to people when they're thinking about, I want to lose weight? Because I think that's mostly where it starts. I want to lose weight. How do you tell them to talk to themselves in their head instead of saying, oh my God, I'm 20 pounds overweight, I'm so fat? What are the words they should be using in their head first?
Oh, it's such a good question. Well, if you like think back to my story, those were the words I said to myself as my 18-year-old insecure self, right? Like, I'm going to get fat. And then if you look at how my journey, then the trajectory of my journey is, I was so obsessed with not getting fat that I had this very unkind journey to myself is one way to put it, right? And so I would agree wholeheartedly. I think that word comes with a lack of kindness towards yourself. Yep. And I think when that is the primary goal, typically there is a lot of ridicule towards yourself. And so I always like to get to the goal behind the goal behind the goal. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yep. And so if someone, you know, were to sit down and tell me that, then we'd have a longer conversation about well, tell me why, and then tell me why, and then tell me why until we hit on the thing that's really the thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does, totally, because if you just teach yourself and constantly tell yourself that being fat is the worst possible thing that you could be.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really what you're doing, Annalisha, right? I mean, if you were saying to yourself, this is the worst possible thing that I could be, I mean, you are missing out on so many other things in life because you're just focused on that when your weight is not who you are and your weight is not your value, but we are constantly told that it is. You know, I remember this was 4 years ago after I'd had Bernie, and I think I've talked about this before, Marjorie, you definitely know about this. Bernie had really terrible eczema and food allergies when she was born. Mm. And we couldn't figure out why she was breaking out, why she was reacting. And I was nursing her exclusively. And I learned that what I was eating was impacting her inflammation and her eczema. I mean, I would touch dairy, you guys, and nurse her, and her cheeks would fire, inflame. Wow. It was unbelievable. I mean, it was really unbelievable. And I'd never dealt with any sort of food sensitivities like that before, so I had no idea how to even get through this. But I then had to cut out about 10 things from my diet, purely out of my child is reacting to this,
right,
and I am dedicated to breastfeeding her. And so I cut out all grains, all sugar, all dairy, all nuts, all of these things that were causing her to react, I was eliminating from my diet. And so what happened, you guys? I got crazy skinny. I mean, yeah. I was the thinnest I've ever been. And the amount of praise that I received during that time in my life was shocking. Yeah. I mean, people everywhere were like, "You're amazing. Look at you. Look at how thin you are. Look at how you just had a baby. Look at how great you are." And in the inside, I was dying because every single time I put a bite of food in my mouth, I was terrified of what was going to happen to her. And it was awful.
And you're getting praised for all the wrong things. Not praised because you're being so mindful about what's going to affect your daughter.
Totally.
For getting praised because you're super
thin. Oh, you look how thin you are. And so, Annalisa, when you talk about that, of like being a young girl, it was, and I never felt that kind of like, it felt like disordered eating to me.
Yeah.
And it was the first time that I really understood what people who live with an eating disorder go through. And I just felt a lot of empathy for that.
Yeah.
And I cried.
Thank you for sharing that. Yeah.
It's hard.
Because I think about that. Like one thing I talk about is, you know, when I was in the most like total psychological warfare time of my life is when I got praised the most as well.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it really is traumatic because it's hard to break the cycle then, or you have this fear of doing things with more ease and more peace and more joy because you know, you don't know if you can maintain what everybody is praising.
For
and
sure.
So I always talk about, like, we have to be more mindful about what we're praising
and what
in
we're
other
saying.
People because it has a huge effect. And just because someone has lost weight doesn't mean it's, like, worthy of praise because you don't know what's going on between their ears.
Yeah, that's
well,
so
ladies,
true.
Thank you so much for sharing that. Yeah.
Ladies, we're 3 for 3. So I was, and when I was about 22 or 23, I was working in the news business. And I'm 5'4". And I was 93 pounds.
Oh, my gosh, Marjorie.
And getting more praise from everybody but my family. But everybody at work, you know, super tiny, super thin. And to the point of you don't know what's going on in somebody's life. For me, the more I got praised, the more obsessive I became about not eating. Because you just think, oh, my God, you know, and I look great. Yeah. And, you know, you think you just look so great. You know, I was a size 2. And, you know, weighing anywhere in the 90s when you're 23 years old and you're 5'4 is not healthy because I know what I was eating then, which was almost nothing but coffee. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I do think, and I know people are trying to be kind, but I think sometimes what they don't realize is when they praise somebody who's super thin, for most people, that's not natural. For most people, I mean, there are people out there who are just tiny by nature. But for most people to be that small, it's not natural. And so there is probably something else going on. And you have to be careful about how you praise that. Because like in your case, Elizabeth, I'm sure, and for me, and for all of us probably, what that makes you feel like is, oh, my God, if I gain 10 pounds, will I not be as attractive?
Oh,
It was that, you know, and then and you can't help but go down that rabbit hole.
It's impossible to not, even no matter how you know, healthy you feel like your self-image and your confidence is, it's impossible to not. So, Annalisa, I wonder, and I know I want to talk about kind of finding that sweet spot for sure, but I do want to ask you, since we sort of went down this road and, you know, I cried in the podcast, which is the whole thing. when we're talking to people about their weight, so if you have a very good friend, okay, so say I see Marjorie and I haven't seen her in a while and I go, oh my gosh, you look great. And maybe she's lost 5 pounds or 10 pounds. Or maybe she's just like glowing and bounding and seems like she has a lot of energy. What are the ways that we can you know, compliment women in our lives on whatever sort of, you know, healthy thing that they're doing that's clearly making them happier and better without going into that territory of just skinny praising.
Skinny praising, yeah.
This is such a good question. This is such a good question. So it's making me think, first off, of this study done where they found that that girls are most often met with praise based on their looks. And young girls is most likely like, oh, you're so cute, or that's such a cute dress. And how people don't know how to greet women in our culture with a form of praise other than that.
Yeah.
So after I heard about that study a few years ago, it's like a practice in my life to just start always just by saying something like, it's really good to see you.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and
nothing about
their looks or, you know, and then that gives like a, you know, like a, it's a nice, it's about who they are.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And what I'm trying to portray is like, it's good to see you if you're 20 pounds thinner or 20 pounds heavier. And it's good to see you if you're having a bad day or if you're having a good day. Like, it's just good to see you. And
I kind of like that. It's so simple, yeah. But it's so kind. It's just good to see you. I've never said that to anybody. I love that.
And then I feel like when you say that and you mean it, it opens up this door for people to tell you a little bit about what's going on in their life. And then, you know, I think there's room for praise when about what people are doing or the results they're getting. Like, once you've had a conversation and you know they're truly like, you know, they're living their healthy sweet spot. They're not like being unkind to themselves. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yep.
And so it becomes a much more human experience where it's not just about like a tagline to say, but just like a conversation to be had. And you can start to feel whether someone needs support or whether they really need like a high five and like, this is awesome. And I think, you know, it's like, that's what relationships are about. That's what being human is about. But for me, it just starts with that simple phrase. Like, it's really nice to see you.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
It's just you as a person. And you're totally right. I love what you said about 20 pounds heavier, 20 pounds lighter. Bad day, good day. I'm happy that I get to see you. That makes me pleased. And that's such a wonderful way to acknowledge another human and make them feel important and remember that they are important and that they're just enough, just the way that they are showing up right in this moment.
Well, and it's also just an immediate, we're going to connect.
Yeah.
I'm good. It's good to see you.
Yeah.
It's immediate. They're just connector words as opposed to, you know, something more superficial. I love that.
Yeah, it's great. Well, Aunt Alicia, every time I'm around you, it's like you're like a calming vibe. I mean, you're just you're like an immediate, just like,
you need that
okay,
this morning.
It's really peaceful. I know. When I'm trying to jam 1,000 things into a day, all things that I love. That's such a gift that you give to other people. And so I know also you being so open and honest about just never striving for perfection, and you once did that, helps people relate to you and figure out, okay, how can I embrace health and wellness and make it part of my life without overtaking my life? So let's talk about your whole method for finding this healthy living sweet spot. And it starts with adding in, not cutting out. What do you mean by that?
Yeah. So I certainly think there are times in life where, you know, it might be appropriate to go cold turkey on something, or like when you were saying, you know, with your daughter, like with food sensitivities and stuff, like it makes sense that sometimes it makes sense to cut out. But in general, I resonate a lot more with the quote, add in to crowd out, which just means you're focusing on adding in great stuff, vegetables, a lock, water, instead of putting the focus on like, I'm not going to drink wine, I'm not going to, you know, do this, I'm not going to do that, I'm going to cut my calories. And what ends up happening is you start to get more in touch with how you're feeling. So if you truly start to add in vegetables in ways that you like them, you're going to start to crave vegetables, and it's going to crowd out, you know, the chips or whatever.
And
I think what a lot of people don't realize, if they haven't practiced health in that way, is that they don't realize actually that that's possible. Mm-hmm. They think health is always about like monitoring and controlling themselves.
Or denying.
Yeah, exactly. Instead of really trusting that their body is wired to be healthy, and will start to give like the appropriate cravings and stuff the more we trust it. And so it's almost like a practice of trust, is like, I'm going to add in great things and trust that, you know, a week from now, a year from now, 10 years from now, like I'm eating and I'm doing a lot of those great things. And the things that I'm maybe not as proud of, about have been minimized.
I love that practice of trusting your body. I think we just look at our bodies with skepticism and fear and distrust all the time. We're constantly waiting for it to fail us or to not show up the way that we want it to show up. And I think that saying that you learn to trust your body is a really empowering thing.
Well, and I think to something you said at the beginning of the podcast, Elizabeth, I think we think it's complicated because of all of the messages that are sent
to
us.
Much,
I think we think it's really complicated when it's not. To your point, it's just if you add in the things that we basically know are good for us. I mean, I think about things the way that my grandmother used to eat.
Yeah.
And it was all pretty fresh.
Yeah.
You know, she wasn't anything. I mean, she wasn't a chef. She wasn't doing anything extraordinary. She was just doing what that generation did because it's what they had. She ate very, pretty small portions, and she ate pretty fresh, and she lived a pretty healthy life. And I think that's, we just complicate things by how many choices we have.
Yeah.
And, just add in the good stuff. I love that because it's easier if you think of it that way. It's less complicated.
Simplicity is another step for you, Annalisa. And I think this is so important to talk about because we are, as Marjorie mentioned, it's so overcomplicated. I mean, the thing was, is when your grandmother was eating that way, Marjorie, it's like, that's just what was available. So
exactly.
That's how you ate.
That's
well,
how you
now,
ate.
Well, now, I mean, if you could pick up a yogurt at a grocery store and you can either be getting something really great or really terrible in the same section. I mean, and it's hard for people to navigate. So what do you mean by simplicity, Annalisa?
Yeah, so I always tell people err on the side of simple because what I see happening all the time is because we don't have these foundations of health in our culture and traditions, like a lot of older cultures have more traditions around foods. They're not constantly questioning things.
Yeah.
Because we don't have that in our culture and we also haven't been taught like great foundations. What I see people do a lot is they kind of neglect their health and then suddenly they want to get quote unquote healthy and then they'll do this like really complex diet and then they go back to neglecting their health. And so I always tell people like we want to err on the side of simple so that we have safety nets. So someday it might be appropriate or good for you to try a more complex thing, but we want to make sure our safety nets are in place. And so I always tell people like my four safety nets are water, movement, fruits and veggies, and deep breathing.
Oh,
there you go.
That's easy.
Like if I'm doing those things on a regular basis, I generally feel really good. And there might be seasons of my life where I am like doing a lot more and I have a lot more complex recipes and workout plans. But in general, like if anyone is doing those four things consistently, their body is going to really benefit.
So Annalisa has this really cool Venn diagram. It is a Venn diagram, guys.
It is a Venn diagram.
Yeah.
With three circles. Okay. So the circles then all intersect in the center as a Venn diagram does. There's one called success, one peace of mind, one sustainability, and the sweet spot is right in the middle of all of those. So when you look at success, because another one of your secrets is setting yourself up for success, what are you doing in that circle so that you can land in the sweet spot?
Yeah. So for success, the example I often give is if you were wanting to be a successful piano player, but you'd never played before, you would realize like there's steps to get there, right?
Yeah, and then you would decide not to do it because it's too much work.
Yeah. And
wrong message, Elizabeth.
Let's restart this.
Yeah, way to go.
But what I do want people to realize is that like being healthy is a skill in our culture because we weren't taught it naturally. Like it's not in the fabric of our culture yet. And so it truly is a skill we have to learn. And so what I see, in a lot of people is like the equivalent when they want to get healthy, it's like the equivalent of sitting down to the piano for the first time and trying to play Mozart. Right.
Right.
So they go to like a really hard fitness class when their fitness level just doesn't quite match that right now. And then they're injured or so sore for 5 days that they don't work out again. So I just always say like just be honest with where you're at in regards to your level and your knowledge. And start there and then baby step your way up to more knowledge and more, higher level of fitness. But there's no need to, we seem to think unless we're like going crazy, we're not healthy. And what I really want people to realize is, like, you can feel successful in this as you go. And so that's my, I guess, my definition of success in this regard when it comes to the sweet spot conversation.
That's really good advice, especially as people are going to start making their New Year's resolution to make weight, which, of course, they will, because we're told to make that resolution at the new year. And I will say what I love about what you're saying. I want to go that fruits and vegetables, deep breathing, movement, and water. So when you're talking about success and making it easy, I will tell you one of the times in my life where I felt absolutely at my best, I was just walking 30 minutes a day. And I was not power walking. I was just walking. I was walking around this little lake that I lived near. And it was, I wouldn't have looked at it like, oh, I'm so successful in my fitness journey. I just felt good. I felt good because it was time to think. It was time. And I toned. I didn't lose a ton of weight, but I felt pretty toned. And I think that's a really good message to people. It's like, don't go take the hardest level of yoga, or don't go and take a cardio class that is going to, you're going to just feel terrible when you're done, because you won't go back. And so I think that's really good advice going into the new year. If people want to feel better, look at it as movement and just start moving.
And the fun and the satisfaction is the next secret. And I would assume that that applies a lot to that movement element, Annalisa. Is that right?
Oh, totally. Yeah. You know, I always tell people, like, you know, we seem to think health is like a particular program or something, or it's like this particular routine you did when you were 25 and you were this size, you know what I'm saying? And what I always like to tell, you know, remind people, like, life is a long time.
Yes.
Life is a long time. There's going to be so many seasons, and you're going to need different things in different seasons. And you have permission to maximize the fun and satisfaction.
Yeah.
You have permission to find the right yoga class for you. You have permission, you know, to drop a yoga class and go to the treadmill and watch a movie. You know, you have permission to mold everything to, you know, a feeling that equals satisfaction for you. And that comes with food too. You know, one thing I learned in health coach training, they always said, like, if you have to put chocolate syrup on your veggies in order to get them in your body and enjoy it, like, do it. You know what I mean? So just, like, let's not make this so crazy. Like, what makes it fun for you? What makes it enjoyable? And then do it and give yourself that permission slip always.
I love that.
The mental piece of this is also really important. And thinking better and willpower are your next secrets to finding the sweet spot. And I want to know how you think better, because it's like that's the hardest thing to shift is the mindset that we have going on, because I don't think we have enough faith in ourselves. And I think we're so outcome oriented that we're just obsessed with that final number. Which, newsflash, once you get to that weight number, I mean, it doesn't just stay there.
No. Like, you have to... Well, if you haven't reevaluated how you're thinking about things, if you haven't changed the way you're thinking about things, you won't stay at that number.
That's
and
totally
then you're
true.
In the cycle, and then you're off and running. Mm-hmm. So how do we think better?
Well, I think the first step is realizing it's valuable to think better.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's
why
it's like secret number five is focus on thinking better. I think if you are at a place where you're willing to be like, oh my gosh, that is of value, because we undermine it in our society. We're such an action oriented doing society. And so I think first step is like really being aware of what you're thinking and realizing that that has a huge effect. And part of my philosophy is not only the Venn diagram, but I also have these quadrants. And on the horizontal axis is like doing an action. And then on the vertical axis is the intangible. So that's like thinking and being. And what I find is that, you know, one of the reasons I'm so passionate about helping people stop praising willpower is because whenever we're using willpower, we're often in what I call the bottom right quadrant. So if you think of like healthy behaviors on the right side and unhealthy on the left, and then happy and on the top and unhappy on the bottom.
Yeah.
Usually when we're using willpower, we're doing healthy behaviors, but we're unhappy to a certain extent. And what I found is there's this thing that I call the vicious 180. And the vicious 180 is actually this a triangle on the four quadrants. And the reason I call it a vicious 180 is because if you add up all the angles of a triangle, you get 180 degrees. Mm-hmm. But it's this like vicious cycle where you're not like doing a true 180 shift where things are getting better. and you're able to sustain it. So what happens is usually you stay in the bottom right quadrant until like you can't take the exhaustion and the unhappiness.
Yep.
And then you pop up to the top left where you're you know, a bit more happier and lighter, but you're doing like the unhealthy behavior. And you stay there until you feel guilty, and then you drop down and you are like in unhealthy behavior, unhappy. Like that's where the guilt builds up.
Oh my gosh. And this then, is, you are like describing someone in my life like right now. Mm. And it is every time I see her, you never know. Well, then you can figure out which quadrant she's in, where she is. Oh my gosh, Annalisa. Yeah.
And imagine how exhausting it is.
It's exhausting. So exhausting. Cause it's either you're on or you're off. You're unhappy or you're happy.
Yep. Yep.
And if you're on the health train, you're unhappy. And if you're off the health train, you're unhealthy. It's it's so...
And feeling guilty.
And guilty, yes.
Yeah. That's exhausting.
Yeah, it's definitely... I call it now a universal pattern because I do see it play out over and over.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it just like a starting point is I'm not going to praise willpower anymore, or I'm going to practice not praising willpower. Mm-hmm. Because I think the top right-hand quadrant is where we all want to be. And willpower it doesn't exist there. It's not what fuels it. What fuels that is inspiration. What fuels that is intuition. What fuels that is a trust in your body. And so I think when coming back to your question of like, how do we think better? I think that's a really good place to start is just noticing when you want to praise willpower in yourself and others, and then realizing that maybe we've been taught to believe that's a praiseworthy thing, but maybe it's actually doing more harm than good. Mm-hmm.
You just used a really key word in our family, which is fuel. We talked a lot about when my sons were growing up about what fuels what you're doing and why are you doing it. And it goes back to that idea of what's the question behind the question behind the question. And I think that's a really important thing for people to talk about or think about when they're trying to focus on thinking better is why do I do the things that I do? Because we know, I think we can all sit back and think about, okay, do we know people that fuel their life on anger? They're motivated. The things that they do them because they're angry. Are they motivated by ego? Are they motivated by what's the fuel that runs you to do what you do? And I think when you really sort of establish those things, you know, what's the fuel of why I want to be thin? All of those questions, if you look back to the motivation of why you do what you do, I think that's one of the, and you can tell me because you're the expert, I think that's one of the things that you have to establish when you start to think about how am I going to think better. I think you have to think really hard about why you do the things you do.
Yeah. And that's where you talk about the why behind the why behind the why. And then that comes to the final secret, which is thinking holistically. I mean, it's just... Mm-hmm. We're so trained. I think even just like in our healthcare system, you know, if you have a problem with your elbow, you go to the elbow expert. If you have a problem with your knee, you go to the knee guy, you know, versus like this idea of looking at our whole body and our whole mind. I mean, mental health, we've just designated as completely separate from physical health.
Which is insane.
Is insane to
me. Which is a weird word to use. But
yes, I know. It's just crazy to like look at life as so segmented, you know, and it just...
Yeah,
it's when you talk about thinking holistically with regards to this sweet spot and this healthy living, what does that mean to you?
Yeah, that's such a good question. Well, I think, you know, going back to the quadrants idea, when I shift to this idea of thinking holistically, I change the labels on the quadrant. So instead of like unhealthy behavior and healthy behavior, I just change it to engaged and disengaged.
Oh.
And then instead of happy, healthy, I change it to freedom and bondage. And what that does for me is then I can think of any area of my life. Because what I always tell people, if we are robbing Peter to pay Paul, so to speak, for our health, then that shouldn't be labeled as healthy anymore. Mm-hmm. In our culture, we seem to think that, you know, like if we're neglecting relationships or work in order to be healthy, or if we're neglecting, you know, our home, so on and so forth, for some reason, we've been given permission in our culture to label that as healthy.
Right.
And what I'm trying to do is completely redefine that. And so part of that redefining is if you are robbing Peter to pay Paul for something, then that isn't healthy. And then we need to reevaluate what's going on. And so I think for me, just changing the labels on those quadrants to be a bit more general gives me a framework to think about my life where I can be honest with myself about whether or not I'm doing that.
I love those. I love the renaming because those are big words, freedom and bondage, when you start to think about your life in terms of those ideas, that gets really interesting.
And those words are more specific, and they've been less hijacked by marketing, you know, like happy and healthy, which I mean, and we say happy and healthy on this podcast. We say,
oh, we do.
You know, we do.
Oh,
but there is, I know. And every time I say it, I sort of have like a little alarm bell. Marjorie, we might have to do some brainstorming about that, because I do think that the words happy and healthy have been so hijacked, and also just come with a lot of expectations.
Yep.
And and when you shift the words that you're using to describe the feelings that you want to have, when we've previously said happy and healthy, I do think that has a lot of meaning. I want to talk about New Year's resolutions with you, Annalisa, because, you know, as people are listening to this, we're heading into the new year, and it is such a temptation to go, this year I'm doing this. This is what I'm doing. This is who I am. How does this set us up for failure? Because I know you're not going to say a New Year's resolution is a good idea. I just know it.
Yes. So this is a huge conversation. A couple things that are coming up that seem top of mind is one thing, when we set goals that are not what I call, or not what I call, what psychology calls process goals, it automatically is a bit disempowering. So, for example, if you say, I'm going to lose 20 pounds this year, that's not a process goal, that's a result goal. And I hate to break it to you, but you actually don't have a lot of control over that, because that's your body's responsibility, right?
Right.
So, you know, if you feel really committed to setting a goal, I always encourage people, like, focus on the process goals. So what are things that you can actually do, you have control over, that you feel good about?
Okay, so like your things that you were talking about, like movement, like daily movement, or movement, you know, regularly. And then, I don't know, focusing on 5 bottles of water a day or whatever.
These are doable.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And then the big thing when it comes to goals or resolutions is, you know, I guess what we've been taught a lot in our culture is, like, you can use them as permission to beat yourself up.
Yeah.
And that is so, you know, I really want to, you know, give people permission to only use goals as a way to fuel yourself and make yourself feel good about yourself. What I make sure to think about in my own life is this goal serving me, or am I serving it?
Yes.
And if it ever flips to I'm serving it, then I know it's not being used in a way that's truly healthy.
Mm-hmm. All I was going to say is it's interesting, as you're talking about New Year's resolutions and how we should look at not doing it, I was thinking, I think this year what I want to do is look at what I did really well this year and say, I want to continue that next year.
Oh, my gosh, Marjorie, that's so good. Yes.
Because I've already achieved it. It's like, it's so attainable.
Yeah, I love that.
I'm going to do that.
You can just build off the momentum of success, right?
Exactly. Oh, this is very inspiring.
That's really, really good. I know. I like looking at it that way. And, you know, on Best of the Nest, we always talk about bringing it back to your home. And one thing that I thought was so important about talking to Annalisa on this podcast is that, you know, Annalisa provides a lot of content, creates a lot of content for home, including workouts and movements that you can do at home. And what do you think, Annalisa, about this idea of, clearly, you know, you love the idea of people working out at home and kind of getting that movement feeling. And how does that change the dynamic of your home life if you're not feeling like this gym rat pressure? You've got to go somewhere. You have to, like, you know, you have to show up and show that you showed up, this whole thing. I just feel like the home workout dynamic is so interesting.
It is. You know, and I'll just preface by saying, like, I think there are seasons in life, and there's a lot of great ways to be healthy.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes going to the gym is really great for a person or myself at certain times. But the two words that come up when you ask this question are freedom and cozy. Mm-hmm. And those are two values or two ways of being or feelings that are really important to me. When I can feel cozy and when I can feel free, I just feel good. It's like you feel like yourself, right?
Yeah.
And I think there is a power in working out at home, where you can do it whenever you want to. You can look however you want to look. You're not trying to prove something. you're really, it's really about just feeling good because you're not showing up to like prove anything to anybody or look a certain way.
Yeah.
And I love that about that option.
I do too. And for me, I do a very, very, very simple, I would just say it's more stretching even than yoga. And I try and do it every day. Mm-hmm. And what I found was I like doing it in the dark. Oh. I just like doing it in the dark.
Nice.
And so that, it goes back to that feeling of cozy, that it's relaxing. You know, I follow along from this woman on YouTube, and I can play that. I can play it in the dark. And I'm more likely to do that. It's just a 20-minute stretch, but I'm more likely mm-hmm. to do that at home than I am to go someplace. Because I used to love candlelight yoga stretch classes.
Oh,
you know,
so
I used
fun.
To love that. They're
yeah.
so nice. Mm-hmm. But you still have to get there. You still have to dress. You still have to do all that. So it's just been a really nice habit to just say, I just do this at home, turn the lights off. It's really, it's very relaxing.
It.
It's very relaxing.
But that's about, you know, that's about shifting the mindset. And, you know, that kind of brings us just back to the beginning of what we've talked about with Aunt Alicia from the beginning, which was, you know, what was going on between your ears while you were getting all of this praise for how you looked, and it wasn't yeah. great. And if you can shift the focus from movement as related to I'm doing this so that my body will conform to the expectations that I and everyone else have for it, to I'm moving because it makes me feel free
yeah.
is a fully, oh. it's just a full shift. It's like a total life change. And that's what you're promoting, Aunt Alicia. I mean, you are really, you talk about these things in a way, and I talk to a lot of fitness people, and you talk about it in a way that nobody else talks about. And I just hope that more and more people continue to hear your voice, because I do think that it's important work that you're doing. We love you.
Thank you so much.
It was so nice to meet you. Thank you for being with us.
I already made her promise she'll come back. By the way, I had a pre-conversation with her yesterday, and I said,
okay, so now you're doing it before we even talk to them.
Yeah, because I just want our guests need to know that just like our listeners, they are part of the Best to the Nest family.
Yes.
And, you know, Aunt Alicia and I were already talking yesterday. She said, do you think you guys want to do some events? Like, what are you thinking with this? And we said,
ooh.
Yeah. I said, the wheels are turning, and Aunt Alicia's in,
oh.
right?
Yes. Absolutely. Oh, I'm really inspired by what the two of you are doing. Thanks for putting this out. It's so cool.
Oh, thank you for being with us.
Thanks, Aunt Alicia. We'll talk to you soon. Take care. I love Aunt Alicia Lynn. Aunt Alicia Lynn Nimala. She used to go by her middle name. Now she decided to really commit to her marriage and go by Nimala. Did you know that, Marjorie? I was giving her a hard time about that. We were laughing. She is, Aunt Alicia is fantastic. And I'm so glad that she was part of the podcast conversation. And I mean, she just has like a really wonderful, calming energy about her. So if you want to know more about her, exercise180.com is her website. That's where you can find out a lot more about her. You can also find her on Facebook and Instagram. And we'll, of course, post in our show notes and on our social media channels where you can find out more about her. So you can put a face to the name. And
loved
to,
it. Love yeah. talking to her.
Thanks
so
much.
So important.
Yeah, it was wonderful. If you are enjoying this podcast, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and share it with a friend. And if you have a moment, give us a little review at Apple Podcasts. We have one from Conductorson. Okay. Ladies, I'm so glad to hear your sweet voices once again. In a hey. World full of unbelievable stories, I find your stories are real and so relatable. I know life gets crazy. Please don't stop doing this podcast. Thank you for gracing the airwaves once again. Okay, that's a wonderful review. And on a day when I have mm-hmm. multiple recordings, shoots, and a flight to catch, don't worry. I'm in it to win it. We're sticking with it. Not going
we
anywhere.
Are sticking with it. And please reach out to us. You can find both of us on Instagram at Best to the Nest or at Eliz Reese and at It's Me Marjorie One. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Be kind to yourselves, everybody.
True.